All right, well, so for today, day two, I just want to bring you up to date as to where we are in terms of that reading that you just did and some of the things that you might want to focus on in terms of your discussion groups. I thought yesterday everybody did a great job. The discussion groups were staying on task. That was good. Everybody stayed focused on getting on the subject. And I liked the idea of covering the things that people were interested in, where you could actually bring up the things that you had questions about and wanted to discuss. That worked out really well, I thought. So where are we in terms of the timeline right here? So the chapters that we're dealing with today are chapters now that all of a sudden jump to the point that Samson's involved. He's an older person, and in this case now he's old enough to like seek marriage. So probably where you're at right now in terms of Samson's age right here, this is Samson, that's Samuel up in here. So we're probably up in this point right here where Samson's at least around 18 or so, maybe even higher, and you're up in this period right in here of Samson. We know that Samson only judged Israel for 20 years, so you've got to be somewhere in this region right here when he's actually judging. So it may be possible right now that actually Eli has died already. That's a possibility. The ark has already been captured. The ark has already gone off to the Philistine territory, and it may be that the ark has already come back to Kiriath-Jearim. So that's where this chapter is going to be, this section today. And then tomorrow's section, we're going to cover the end of Samson's life, and then we'll move on to Samuel after that. So if the ark was captured at this point, if the battle had already taken place, Eli had already died, and now Samuel has now come in as judge in this case, or as operating as priest, then here we got Samson over here at Zorah, and the ark's probably over here at Kiriath-Jearim where it came to settle after it came back from the Philistines, and the men of Beth-Shemesh didn't want it anymore, so they sent it up here. But Samson would have been up in here at this point in time when all this is going on, where the ark is moving around and coming back. Just interesting to note that everybody just sort of leaves the ark alone. There's not really much mention about the ark at all and this whole story all the way through this period of the judges. Nobody seems to care about it at all until what? How long does it go? Who finally cares about the ark? Who? David, right? I mean, you got to wait all the way to the time of David to where anybody really cares about the ark. So the tabernacle's sitting up in Shiloh, way up in here somewhere, and the ark's down here at Kiriath-Jearim, and the two have been separated probably at this point. I don't know whether you've ever looked at that, but it probably in this point where if you really have covered the historical period when Eli dies, you know, in terms of what actually happens at that point, that it may be that at this point the ark's been separated. And it's gone off to the Philistines, and now up in Shiloh right there, you've got this difference between, you've got a priesthood operating what seems to represent the old covenant up there in Shiloh. The ark comes down here, spends all this time in Kiriath-Jearim, and what is amazing about it is that David then realizes, when David comes along, does he put the ark back in the tabernacle? When David does care about the ark, does he put it back in the tabernacle? No. What does he do? Well, it's a really fascinating story that you know, at some point you have time, you should spend some time on it because it's picked up a lot in the New Testament as well. What does David do for the ark when he brings it to Jerusalem? Where does he put it? Does he put it back in the tabernacle? No. Does he put it in the temple? No, because God doesn't want him to build a house for the temple. So where does he put it? He puts it in a tent. And who comes to worship? Jews and Gentiles. And that came to represent to the community forever the tabernacle of David in which Jews and Gentiles worship together. And I don't know whether you remember, but that was the reasoning that James uses in Acts 15 when he finally argues the case from the Bible, because Paul gets up and says his case, Peter gets up and says their case by experience. But when James gets up to speak at the Jerusalem conference, James says, and the Bible says, and he uses the tabernacle of David and says, look, if that's the case, that the tabernacle of David is going to be raised up again where Jews and Gentiles worship together, why can't we do that now? And that's part of his argument. So anyway, it's fun to look. This is the period now where all this is going to take place. So Samson's going to go from Zorah over here, take a wife in Timnah right there, which really is sort of on the border of what should have been Dan and Judah, but this is now operated and owned by the Philistines in this case. It's only about a four-mile journey, so he really didn't go very far for this first part of the trip. But later on, as a result of having to go get all these garments to pay off the Philistines, he has to make a hike. He goes from Timnah all the way over here to Ashkelon, to the coastland right there, and he gets them all from Ashkelon. And some one of the things you may want to talk about is, why did he do that? Why did he go all the way over to Ashkelon to get these 30 garments that he's trying to get to pay off the riddle in this case? So that will be a fun one. So some of the things I thought you could at least look at today and discuss, hopefully you'll get a time to do this, is number one, this year, I think in this period right now, you're going to find somewhere in chapter 14 and 15, there is a spiritual awakening of Samson, and he finally becomes on board with what God wants him to do. And I think you'll see that. We just went through it in the reading today, but look for it again as you're going through your class. You know, why would Samson go to Timnah to look for a Philistine wife? Why didn't he just take a wife amongst the people of Israel? You know, as his parents said, isn't there somebody around here? Is it good enough? Why in the world did he go off to the Philistines? And you can look at how Samson's parents handled this in terms of your discussion there. Although I would caution you about the marriage of the Philistines, because sometimes we go to this and we read it from our perspective of living here in Canada or Seattle or wherever you're coming from. When I went to the Middle East over to Dubai and got invited to weddings over there, I was very surprised that they still do weddings in Dubai amongst the Muslim community like the people would have in the Middle East 3,000 years ago. And so when I go to a wedding, I go with a bunch of guys to a place and we all sit around and talk for a while. I know most of them are on their cell phones and they just have their heads down. And then all of a sudden it's like dinner time and you eat and you have a meal and the groom is there. But you never see any of the women, none of them. And this is probably what marriages were like back in these times. They separated the men and the women at this time. And so this is what a wedding was like. And then when it's time for the actual, at the end of the period, the guys are all done eating, then the groom then goes over and he joins his wife with the women. And the women only see the groom. You don't see any of the rest of the people at the wedding. And even that is only for a short period of time. So it helps us understand how in the world Jacob got fooled with Leah and with the Rachel incident. You wonder, like, how in the world did he know he's marrying? I mean, we picture if you're standing up there and you're getting married and you're holding somebody's hand, how can you not know which one you're holding? It isn't like that. That's not probably what really happened. He probably never dealt with her and interacted with whoever he's marrying until he went into the tent. That's the first time. And at that point, who knows what condition he was in. So it helps you understand a little bit, like in terms of like why mom wouldn't go to the wedding. I mean, why in the world would mom go to a Philistine wedding when the only people she's going to be around are amongst the Philistine women? It may be that it was cultural things that influenced it, but it's possible it could also be spiritual. So anyway, it's fun to discuss those kind of things and see if you can figure them out. That phrase right there about it was of the Lord, that's a good one to discuss in your groups, because some people take that to sort of like give Samson a way out and say, well, if it was of God, then whatever he did was fine. And I think that's worth at least looking at. The lion, the bees, and the honey, that will be a fun one to discuss, because we have beekeepers here who can tell us about bees and whether bees would they ever swarm and go to the carcass of a lion. They know by experience. The Philistines, why did they have to supply 30 companions for the wedding? Now that's an interesting question. Samson's going to get married over there to a Philistine woman, and where's all his buddies? They supply 30. What can you learn about how Samson's wife and her parents treated him? I think that's something Samson should have learned, but he sort of was blinded by love. And I guess that's one of the great lessons that's kind of come out of this whole thing, is that you think you stand, but take heed lest you fall. Everybody thinks they're strong enough to go through this and so figures, you know, I'm not going to be like Samson. But you know, we have watched so many people go through this in life, young people who go off to university and they come back with some person that they have really connected with, or something happens in their life that they've connected. We used to bring in people to our CYC periodically that would talk to young people and tell them about mistakes they made when they got married. And I found that very useful as a young person. We had folks come in and talk to us about how they married out of the truth. And they told us about what life was really like. And all the things they had to now experience that they never had really thought about. All they thought about is, I love this girl and they want to get married to her, and never realized that, wow, she's going to take some of my money and take it to her church and give it to them, and she's going to take my kids there and want to raise them over there. And all these things that people never had thought about ahead of time. And it's good to think about those things ahead of time. And in this case, this is the time of your life where you're trying to make those kind of decisions. So it's good to watch that Samson should have read the signs that the angels kept giving him to let him know that, Samson, you're making a mistake here. But he didn't. The men of Judah, why did they give Samson up to the Philistines so easily? I think that's a good thing to at least look at in terms of Samson's relationship to his own community, the people of Judah. And what was God trying to teach him at the end of that reading today after killing the 1,000 people of the 1,000 Philistines at Ramoth-Lehi? That was a huge lesson where the angels intervene now more than they had before, where all of a sudden he's really thirsty and they're trying to reach Samson at that point. And I think it's good to look at how God did use Samson's weakness to further his plan. When it talks about here about being of the Lord, you can connect those two kind of concepts together. So hopefully, it's going to be a fun discussion time right now. A lot to cover, two chapters today compared to yesterday, but hopefully you have a lot of fun with that, and enjoy.